Hi everyone, and welcome to another Talking Insomnia episode, which should really be like talking anxiety, talking inner struggle, talking whatever we want to say. But I'm super excited to have Sean back. Welcome.
What's up? How's it going?
Really, really well. I'm super glad to have you back again. And since we last spoke, how's life been treating you?
Life has been great. Kind of same old. We were talking a little bit offline, but making content, working on the mentorship. We've been growing a bit and just trying to make the best experience we can, I guess, with the clients and helping them speed up their recovery journey as much as we can without adding too much pressure on it. You know how that is. So yeah, that's it, man. How's everything going with you?
And now things are good. Same here. Putting out content. Trying to improve the experience and help more people out there. So same really.
Yeah, I had a
And
great time on your last podcast, by the way.
it was super nice. It
It was
was
fun.
super nice. And then just to share with the community here, like we were like, we have to talk. We have to talk soon. And then like, well, here we are. We haven't talked
Yeah,
last time, but yeah, super excited. And to share with with everyone tuning in here, like I had the idea to create a video, a collab, or like whatever you want to call it here, where I picked like some of my favorite teachings from Sean Kasam, and I wanted to like name them like Kasamisms
I like it.
anyways, I have several here that I've written down. So should we just jump in?
Let's go. Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, no, it's really when I've been watching your content, there's so much. I just see the thumbnail. I'm like, oh, this is good. This is really good. And sometimes I watch the video, sometimes I don't. But here's one of my favorites, which I think you touched on this a couple of times. And basically, I just wrote down here number one, why acceptance doesn't work. You know,
Yo, okay,
tricky
okay.
one because a lot of people feel like acceptance is like the real thing, and to some degree, like it is right. But what can you explain like this teaching you have on why acceptance doesn't work?
Yeah, so with acceptance, the issue is that sometimes a lot of people have a misrepresentation of the idea of acceptance. So they think a couple of things. They think acceptance is something you have to do. Like, okay, well, how, okay, Sean says acceptance is the cure to this, or helps people overcome. Okay, how do I accept? How do I know if I'm doing it right? Like, what do I do to accept? Like, Sean's not giving me the steps to accept. I don't understand, right? And so a lot of people come from that frame where they feel like acceptance is a doing. The second thing they also do is that they use acceptance as a sophisticated way to make it go away, which kind of falls into doing something, right? Okay, I'm feeling, I'm having trouble sleeping. So if I can just accept my symptoms, okay, am I accepting? I don't know. Am I accepting? Oh, my sleep is still like, I still can't sleep. I still can't sleep. So they make acceptance as a sophisticated way to make the symptoms go away. And so what happens is that acceptance that almost turns like that's really a principle turns into like the sophisticated technique. And people try to use it as a technique. And the second you use anything as a way to make this go away, a technique, a breathing technique, or whatever else, a grounding technique, it's not that those things don't work, but a lot of it has to do with intention behind it. And so the reason why I called it, why acceptance doesn't work is because the intent behind it is the biggest thing. And what I often find with a lot of with anxiety sufferers and even people that have trouble sleeping is that they aren't able to, they're so focused on the symptoms that just letting it be there is really difficult. And then what they naturally do without realizing is that they try to use acceptance as a way, like, okay, well, I'm accepting, but my symptoms aren't going away. They're still focused so much on the symptom. When if you could just focus on the principle really of it, the principle is allowing and accepting without focusing on whether the symptoms are there or not. And that's a practice in itself. And I know you know that. Then what happens is you'll see it happening. But I think it was, I created that video is because I kind of, people started labeling me as like this guy that preaches acceptance. And the truth is that I just preach what works. I don't really care. I don't care about technique. I don't care about putting myself in a bubble somewhere. I'm just like, I just care about what works. And whatever works, I will talk about. And so that's really what I talked about, yeah.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, and it was almost like gave me goosebumps when you said like it's the intent behind it that matters because that's kind of like literally what I always say myself. It's so similar, but yeah, 100% agree. And I just quickly like share a little analogy that I use that I think could be fun to share is like when people say you know, I often misplace my glasses, right? And people say like, well, when you don't look for the glasses, then you'll find them. And yeah. I say, imagine if I'd be like, dang it, I've been not looking for the glasses for 3 hours and I still can't find them.
Yeah.
Same principle, right? The exactly. idea becomes like, it becomes an effort. And so, yeah.
Exactly. I would say it comes to you, right? Like the thing comes to you. You don't yeah. go out looking for it. And it's the fact that you're trying to look for it and trying to like expedite the process that's causing all this tension and all this pressure and, you know, hence all the symptoms, really.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So actually, to stay on this topic just a little longer, I think you if I hear correctly, like you believe in the principle of acceptance, but it can turn into like an effort, like you say. Actually, I didn't don't really have a question. I thought I had a question.
Yeah. You know how it is with YouTube, right? Like sometimes it's like it has to be. You know, we work really hard on the content. And what I used to notice really early on is I used to like give out really good content, but like, unfortunately with the YouTube algorithm, it has a lot to do with the title and thumbnail. In fact, title and thumbnail is the biggest thing. And so sometimes I have to like come up with, you know, a little bit clickbaity titles. So it's like, acceptance doesn't work. What does that mean? Sean talks about that as a way to kind of click the video. But then you see, exactly. Acceptance as a principle, I think that's the only way out. But a lot of it has to do with using it as a sophisticated form of avoidance, using it as a technique, you know, to make something go away. That's where it's not true acceptance, right? You can't say it's acceptance. It's like, oh, I accepted my symptoms, but it's still there.
Exactly.
And that's what a lot of people have an idea of acceptance. Okay, if Sean says I accept, it'll go away. Okay, I'm accepting. Exactly. It's not going. That it doesn't work like that.
100%.
And so, you know, it's like we talk about true acceptance,
yeah.
which is the ironic paradox of this whole thing, right? Because it's like you feel like if you have to let it be there, it's almost like you're giving up, or it feels like, you know, like, oh, like I'm just like giving up on myself, or like, okay, I'm just having to come to terms with the fact that I'm going to be like this forever. Yeah. And it's like, no, actually, this is the way. Actually, if you just do this, you'll see recovery comes to you, right? Yes. Like, you'll see like sleep comes to you, the symptoms go away, all these things happen on its own. So
that's really, by the way, is another kind of confusion about acceptance, I think, is a lot of people think, oh, I have to accept that I'm going to be like this forever. Like that thing often comes up.
It's right? That weird paradox, right? Yeah. It's like you have to almost weirdly be okay with the fact of the symptoms are going to be there as long as they need to be.
Yeah.
And as the consequence will go away. I think, I feel like our job is to like tell people, it's like, look, if you're doing it right, it will go away. That's the only assurance I'd really give. Which is like, look, if you're doing the right steps, it'll happen. It's inevitable. Then it's like, okay, how long is it going to take? As long as it needs. Now just focus on that, you know? Yeah.
It's funny. Like, now we're going on a sidetrack, but I think it's an interesting one. Like you said, like it's inevitable. And I've been thinking so much about creating content around how like these sort of like, how should I put it? Principles, like using your word, like these principles, I think are just as robust as like laws of physics, like gravity. Yeah. Like it's just equally like predictable in that sense. It's equally like inevitable as that, really. Do you agree?
I agree. Yeah, I think these are universal laws. Like right. I think no matter who you are, as long as you have a nervous system, like these laws apply. Like, yeah, no, I do. And I think, I mean, and I'm sure it's same with you, like, you know, they're not like scientific studies, but like we help people around the world, different backgrounds, cultures, creeds, like religions, languages, and like the principles are the same if you just apply it. Context differs, but the principles stay the same. I think the biggest thing, one of the things we focus on, is you'll have all these different contexts, but if you can understand the principles, you can attach it really easily, right? If you can connect the context to the principle, you'll always have an answer, right? Like an example was COVID, right? How were we going to respond to COVID? We had no idea about what was going to happen. But people that, you know, I work with, the, you know, anxiety sufferers that have recovered, they didn't fall back into the trap because they were like, oh, I don't know how to respond. They knew the principles really well, and they attached the context and be like, okay, well, they were able to do that really well. So it's almost like they knew the basics so well that they could apply it in every principle, like in every domain in life. But I do think it's universal. I think it's like people are special in their own way, but this is not one of those ways, you know?
That's remarkable. Like, we say the same things really so clearly. All right, let's go to number two.
Yeah.
You create a lot of content around this one, which is why we can't look at recovery in percentage points. Why we can't say like, I'm 82% recovered or 26% recovered. Yeah. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. And so the thing is about recovery. See, we try to conceptualize recovery a lot mentally. And a lot about recovery is not about conceptualizing it like that. And what happens is when people start measuring based on a percentage scale, it does a couple of things. The first thing it does is that it makes recovery a finish line. And I think anyone that's truly recovered tells you that there wasn't a moment where they were behind the finish line and then there was a moment they were past it. It's just what happens is that they almost outgrow this problem. They outgrow it. They don't like fix it. They outgrow it. And then the problem disappears on its own. So I would say, and I realized this actually, you know, I realized this as a coach, because early on I noticed people would talk a lot about this finish line and I would just let it go past it. Right? I was just letting them do it. And then what I realized is people would make a lot of progress. They'd go back to living. They were doing even more things, but they were still frustrated. They were looking at the future as some form of salvation where, you know, the future was where they were going to have no problems and stuff like that. And you could tell they made so much progress and they were like, I'm like, you know, why are you disappointed? And then I realized it's like so much about recovery is being okay with now, you know? And so I really steered away from that finish line idea. The second thing is that when people start focusing on percentages, what they're really saying is, this is how I feel right now. So they're measuring their progress based on their symptoms. So if the symptoms aren't there, oh, I'm at 90%. Oh, if the symptoms are there, okay, I'm at 40% now. So now they're measuring their progress based on their symptoms. And that's no different than anyone that's not focused on the recovery journey. They're always measuring their progress based on their symptoms. And the problem is recovery isn't linear, right? It's like, it is this up and down. Like, it's this up and down process, 3 steps forward, 2 steps back, 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. And if you're measuring it based on a percentage every time, you're going to be measuring it based on how you feel. And that's going to determine where you're at, which that's not the case. The determinant of recovery, I always say, is how high are your symptoms? The higher, the better. How well are you responding? Which is a different approach. Now it's not a percentage point. Now it's not measuring it based on how you feel. Based on how you feel, if your anxiety symptoms are really high, now you can be using this as an opportunity. And so in that case, that's a win for me. As a mentor, I don't really care if people's symptoms are low. If they're not having anxiety or they're not having sleep issues or anything like that, I don't need to tell them to, you know, accept and let it be. They know how to do that. The problem is that when the symptoms go up, and if they're doing that, they're going to say, well, they just end up spinning their circles. Cause they're like, Sean, I was, you know, feeling fine last week. This week, now I feel like I'm back at square one. And it's like, no. You know, you're measuring your progress based on your symptoms. Not to deviate too much, but, you know, we talk a lot about setbacks on my channel. And I thought educating people on setbacks would help, but it's only created more problems. People are like, am I in a setback? How do I know if I'm in a setback? And I'm like, setbacks are just to let you know that they exist. That the idea is that recovery is this up and down process. But then people start trying to classify their symptoms. Oh, this is a setback. This isn't a setback. Not recognizing that whether it is a setback or not, the response is the same, you know? And so that's why I try to shift from this 100%. And when people say this to me, I know where they're at the recovery journey. I know they're stuck because they're measuring their progress based on whether the anxiety is there or not. Once people start realizing, okay, it's not actually the anxiety that matters. What I can control, the locus of control, is the response.
Yeah.
Then they start looking at anxiety, high symptoms, as, okay, this is an opportunity. They're going to ask naturally different questions. They're not going to ask that same question. They're going to ask questions beyond. And so I'll know exactly where they're at. So that was the whole idea of that 100%. And the last thing, sorry.
It's great.
There were times where I thought I would be at 100% when I was like going back to work fully and I was fully functional. And then I realized that I was actually doing more things than I was used to. Like, I went beyond that. So technically I would have gone above 100%.
Yeah.
Like, if that was my thing, I was like, wait, I'm doing more. I have more stress. I have more responsibilities. I'm having more fun. Like I'm doing everything more than I did even before I fell into the cycle. And so, you know, that's, again, it's like, it makes people want to chase the past.
Yeah.
Like, no, don't chase the past. Like whatever it is, you're limiting your potential. If you're trying to chase a feeling in the past, you know, the focus is really focus on now. However you feel is fine. Measure it based on your response. And the days will just keep getting better and better. Honestly, I think my life is a lot more fun even now than it was before I fell in the cycle. And I still have more stress and I do, you know, but if I was chasing the past, it would have like, I would have never came to here because I would have just been focused on how I used to feel.
100% well said. And you know, a lot of people ask me like, why am I not sleeping like before? And I often say, this is kind of like, you know, it's intentionally a little bit of a, like a mind twist. Like I usually say like, well, you before you weren't trying to sleep like before, exactly. Right? You know, yeah.
You just slept.
You just slept.
Yeah. Yeah. So don't chase that. Cause you might even have better moments where you could sleep even like better. You know, I always had trouble sleeping on a flight and I always had trouble. That was the one place I could sleep anywhere.
Yeah.
I can't sleep, which is crazy because when I was struggling with anxiety, I don't think I slept for like a year and a half. But now I feel like I sleep everywhere except a plane. But I went to Dubai, I was mentioning to you before, and I passed out the whole time. I passed out. And so I was like, whoa, like, you know, I didn't go with the intention of, oh, I'm not going to sleep. I went with, if I sleep, I sleep. If I don't, I don't.
Exactly.
And I just happened to fall asleep and I kind of surprised myself. I was like, wow, like I slept through this flight. Like I'm already like in London. Like what happened? You know, and so that's the biggest thing. You're not chasing anything.
Oh, wow. Well said. So cool. I think we already, you know, my other things were like why we can't make a recovery goal, which you already covered.
Yeah.
I think we covered this one too, how you know when you're recovered. Actually, let's stay a second on that one because we kind of touched on it, but maybe we didn't fully explore it. One of your videos talked about like, how do you know when you're fully recovered? What would you say?
I think you would know when you're recovered when recovery is no longer something, a goal to chase.
Right.
When that's why I mentioned it briefly in the beginning of this, where it's like, it's not that you fix the problem, you outgrow the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And the problem goes away from you outgrowing it, right? Like, I think there was this quote, it's like, I think it was from Einstein. It's like, you know, you can't fix the problem in the same paradigm that you're at. You have to go a paradigm above.
Interesting.
And so I think recovery happens when you no longer, this is no longer a problem.
Exactly.
Right. And so once you get to the point where it's no longer a problem, whether the symptoms are there or not, it's not a big deal because they'll eventually go away on their own. But that's the key, right? When people tell me, Sean, I really don't care if my symptoms were there or not. Like, I wasn't even paying attention. Sometimes it popped up, but I just kept living my life. Those people get very quiet on me because there's nothing to say.
Yeah.
Right? Because they know they're like, well, the symptoms are there, but I don't care about it. So what am I going to tell Sean? Like, there's nothing to say. So they often get really quiet and then that's when they live their life. And yeah, so that's what I would say. It's like when recovery is no longer anything you're seeking. That's truly when you like get out. That's when you know. And that's when you know too, I feel like if you do it correctly, you won't fall back in.
Makes
100% identified with that. Yeah.
Makes so much sense. I often, when people often ask me like, hey, Daniel, do I need to stay in the program or what should I do? Like I learned this from one of the success stories we had. And she said that, you know, her big moment was the realization, like, there's nothing I can do to sleep better. And she just saw that. And then she was like, kind of her struggle really ended after that. So now I ask people like, I'm going to give you the statement. And how you feel about it is going to kind of determine it. So I ask people like, how do you feel when I say there's nothing you can do to sleep better? And if people say like, oh, I feel anxious and stressed, then I'm like, okay, we have a little bit more work to do. If you feel like relieved or like, yeah, that's probably true. Then I'm like, not much more to do here. You know,
that's totally true. You know, I remember after I gotten, once I like overcame the anxiety, I remember I would go to my doctor for a couple of things, like, and I was hoping he would say it was anxiety. He's like, no, it's nothing. It's just anxiety. I'm like, okay, good. Okay. You know, like not that I was like panicked about it, but I was kind of like, if it's anxiety, I know how to manage. Like, it's
exactly.
But like, you know, so it was really, that was the opposite for me.
Because when
we had anxiety, I'm like, oh, that means they're not going to help me get this fixed. Like there's nothing they're going to do. Do you ever have, Do you ever have a lot of anxiety when people are off-ramping in your program and stuff, when they're like kind of moving forward, where they feel like they've been relying on you a bit and now they have to do things on their own? Have you experienced that?
Yeah, no, I think that for me, it often becomes that question, like, you know, do you think I'm okay to do this on my own? Kind of like, because yes, like they have to some degree relied on like the program, the teaching, like having support. And so that definitely becomes like a real moment of anxiety for a lot of clients. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. But again, it's the same thing. It's an opportunity too.
Yeah. It's yeah, like, always.
Eventually you let go of the training wheels too. Are you going to feel a little bit of anxiety? Cool. You know how to respond to it, right? That's all we practice now. You know, and I think those are the best coaches. Those are the best mentors, right? We're not consultants.
Yeah.
We could be their consultant for the rest of their life and just tell them what to do.
Yeah.
It's really important for us to have them start to think critically and, you know, let them fumble on their thought process a bit and let them catch up and like see exactly so that they can guide themselves, right?
Yeah.
I
100% believe it. Like, I feel like my work is so much about like helping a client become like their own coach, right? Because exactly. Then they're set, and not to criticize, you know, any, not to be like, not to, to produce any kind of general criticism of a kind of the traditional system there, but sometimes you hear people who say like, well, I've been in therapy for like 20 years and I go to, then I'm like, always like,
I know,
you know, like what's going on right now?
I have very strong feelings about those too. I do. Yeah. Because it feels like they're just consultants. And
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, some are great. Some are like really trying to empower people. But, you know, sometimes I feel like the way the industry is set up, I feel like it's based on like, you know, booking calendars.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so, but yeah, no, that's a, I have, yeah, I feel like, yeah. I
no, we'll do a separate episode on that.
Yeah.
Hunting episode. So, okay, this is a little tricky subject, but I saw this and I thought we should talk about this. So you had one post where you said like, is childhood trauma why I have anxiety now?
That is really contentious.
But you know, but I thought about, actually, we don't have to talk about childhood trauma. We can just think of it also as like, is a past traumatic event of any reason, you know?
Yeah.
Is that why I have anxiety now?
Yeah. And this is a really good point. And so this was something I experienced myself, and I see a lot of clients experiencing it, which is, what they try to do is that a lot of people, my clients, they fall into the cycle because they get tricked in. They get tricked into the cycle. It's often through a panic attack, but they just fall in by accident. And maybe there was a stressor involved. Maybe there was no reason, but whatever it is, there's a whole bunch of reasons why it happens. And what happens is that when those people are in the cycle, they're so desperate to go out, to get out of it, that they end up trying to search for something that happened in the past that might have triggered it. It's kind of like acceptance, where they're using it as a way to feel better right now. So they're trying to find that moment where something may have happened. And I feel like everyone in their past has gone through something in some variation, right? Because I can't think of the word right now, but it's determined based on your own background, right? So whatever might be traumatic for somebody else might not be for you. Maybe something that was overwhelming for somebody else may be also overwhelming for you. Everyone's kind of different in that sense. But I think what happens is that a lot of people search for that, trying to find meaning. And they try to go into this rabbit hole, trying to find something in the past. And I had that experience too. And what I tell people, what I often find with people on board, it's what I first say is, it doesn't matter how you fell in. You fell in because the focus right now is helping you get out right now. Right now, where you're at. Right now is all that matters. What happens with childhood stuff is that there are certain behavior patterns that people have that prevent them from getting to recovery. So it's like, okay, they're here right now. They need to get here. I know how to get them here. I can get them here, but there's going to be obstacles along the way, certain mindsets, certain beliefs about themselves, certain insecurities that's going to prevent them from getting there. So the idea is like, but I've always found that those surface up as you're going through the recovery journey. And as they surface up, you can help people readjust their mindsets along the way. But I've never found going back into the past. Now, maybe some people had a traumatic situation, but what I find is that with my clients, most of those things have resolved themselves. That issue is still not there right now. There might be certain self-preservation habits that are there, but those will be uncovered as you're going through the recovery journey. So what I always say, focus on recovery first, then uncovering. The uncovering will happen along the way. I had some moments too where I didn't realize I had certain patterns, certain thought patterns that was affecting my recovery journey. But as they surfaced up, I addressed them along the way. But the overall principles were the same. But what I just often find is a lot of people try to find some stuff. And worst of all, I sometimes find people use it as a identity. Oh, well, yeah. I went through childhood trauma, so I can't get out of this.
Right.
Exactly. And then the second it becomes an identity, it becomes a limitation. Yeah. The second it becomes a limitation, then it's a whole different thing, right? It's not you're just helping them overcome their symptoms, but you have to have them drop their ego. And, you know, this identity that they have, which is also very anxiety provoking for them because they feel more exposed. They feel more, you know, and so that's really the idea of it. I have no issues with people going into childhood trauma. I just always feel like sometimes it's the right information at the right time. Mm. I feel like that's something people get the right information at the wrong time. And then what that does is that complicates the recovery process.
Yeah.
Right. Like if somebody knows how to respond, but they don't understand the mechanics of what's happening, then even if they know what to do, they'll always sabotage because they don't understand. Okay, well, I'm doing it, but my sleep's not going away. And then you have to go back to understanding the mechanics of insomnia, of anxiety, helping them, you know, and so there's right time, right, you know, right information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Why exactly?
Yeah. I don't think I've said that out loud before.
So. Oh, I'm glad. You know, here. Yeah. And it makes total sense. And like, I think, I took the skating lessons like this winter with my kids, and mm-hmm. I had been skating a little bit since I was a kid. And I felt like I don't need to start with the beginners, right? I should be in like a higher level, but there was no choice. And I had to start with like everybody else. And I was like, this was actually great because there was so many foundational things that I had never understood that was actually really helpful. And it goes back to what you said about education and the right time. It's sort of like, it really helps to start like, you know, with the basic foundations and then move forward, I think. Yeah.
Because then if there's cracks in the foundations, then as they're progressing, there will be certain things that are, you know, bringing them down.
Yeah.
So we try to do as systemized as possible. So like, you know, we really spend a lot of time helping people understand. I know, you know, Daniel, you do the same. But yeah, and what I was talking about with, you know, some of my clients on Monday, which was what made us really good, what made us mentors, what made you, you know, who you are and people that got better is that they got really good at the basics. They nailed down the basics of all this really well. If you can nail down the basics, it doesn't matter what environment you're in, you know? Yeah. People think that, you know, as you progress, there's more complicated. It's like, no, if you just nail this part down, like, that's what I think. I just think I'm just good at this because I nailed down the basics really well.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. And like, you know, I always, when I have new clients, like, you know, I tell clients that you can ask me any questions you want, but it really helps actually if you tell me a little bit about your story. And I don't need to know much at all, but if the client just tells me a little bit about their story, then I can be like perfect. Now I can go through like the foundations and insert their story into it and give them this like solid like understanding like from the get-go. So
yeah, because it makes it relatable.
Yeah,
and that's why people decided to work with us, right? Because we're very relatable. That's the thing, right?
And so, yeah, I know you are. I hope people find me relatable too. Definitely. Very, very cool. Great, great points again. And I have two more. I think we're pretty good on time, so we can probably go through them. Yeah. Oh, this one. Nice one. Lighter one, too. Is it normal to feel anxious about not feeling anxious?
Yeah. That's one of the most common questions. And typically, I look at that as a good question. Yeah.
Right.
Is it normal to feel? Yeah. So what I think happens, what I find happens is that people are very hyper-focused on their anxiety symptoms. Like they're 24/7, right? Because it makes sense logically. They're like, okay, well, if I can focus on my symptoms, I can see what's triggering and what's not, and I can focus on what to do to not make it, to make it go away, right? And so what happens is that there's a habit that gets formed where they're constantly checking in with their symptoms. They'll notice it when they're like, and what the issue that happens is once they start realizing, okay, I just need to let it be, they start realizing my mind is naturally checking in with me. The first thing I wake up, the first thing I do is checking in. And so what happens is that a lot of people start focusing. They have such a habit of checking in that even when they're moments of feeling good, they're still checking in. And they're like, am I feeling this way? Am I not? And the fact that they feel anxious should share that what's going on is, you know, they're sensitized. You know, we call it sensitization, where they're like in a, this is a state. You're going to feel anxious no matter what. I always say this is a good example to show you that it's not really the trigger that matters.
Right.
Like I had people, you know, when I first started this, I thought that if I like told people my story, they would start believing it. They didn't. They said my story gave them anxiety. So then I was like, okay, well, let me bring you a success story. Like people that have recovered. And then I've literally had people message me and say, hey, like this recovery story brought me a lot of anxiety. Why did that happen? And I'm like, look, you're going to feel anxious in any situation. It doesn't matter. And a lot of that. And so I think there's multiple forces. I just think there's they're in this state. They're in this sensitized state, a hyperstimulated state. That's one part. And then the second thing is I think there's a really deep habit of constantly checking in.
Yeah.
And that habit was not formed overnight. Nobody decided, okay, I'm going to create this habit. All they did was they checked in right now. And they did that enough times where it just became a habit.
Exactly.
So one of the biggest things to do is create a new habit. And the way to do that is when you're realizing you're doing this, all you do is recognize it and then just refocus.
Yeah.
And then it goes away. And then that habit gets formed. And then what happens, what I find later on in the journey, is that people, now a new thing arises, which is, Sean, my symptoms were there, but I didn't realize it until like I paid attention to myself. I was so busy externally. So I don't know if the symptoms are going to go away or if they're like not there because I'm not focused on it. Now to me, that's right. Like, okay, there's a new habit forming, you know, they're right. Not hyper-focused internally. So it's a very common thing. And I almost at this point, Daniel, I'm sure you could do it. You can almost know where somebody's at in the journey just by the question that they ask. I'm like, okay, you're a little bit here, but not too far out. You're like right here. And so that's the good part. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's very, very true. And often people are like, they can tell me things like, Daniel, like, you know, you've been working with somebody and they have their ups and downs, but then they have kind of like a really, actually what we call like a speed bump, a bit like setback. Oh, nice.
I like that. I like speed bump a lot more, actually.
I thought that you might like that because like we're always moving ahead, but we have speed bumps. Anyways,
I like that.
And then it can be like, I'm so fed up with this. I'm really so fed up with this happening again. And then I'm like, I actually see that they're very close to leaving the whole thing because they're tired of it. They're like, anyway, so that's just an example of like, when you see things clearly, you can actually really see where things are, where people are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, what was it's just like patterns. We see so many patterns that like, it just becomes clear. If this is all we're doing, which is what we're doing. Like it's, people really think their questions are very unique.
I
wish I'm feeling kind of like burnt out, like answering the same question every time.
No, I see that one. It really is the same variety of same questions. And I thought something I was gonna add to this, but just to contextualize and maybe clarify for some people listening that I think this habit happens like we're constantly checking in, and then the weird things happens maybe when somebody's like checking in and they're like, whoa, there's like nothing there. And then that in itself becomes something new and unusual. Then like, whoa, there's nothing there. And that makes me anxious, right? Something like that.
Yeah. It's new, right? And they're like anytime, any sort of uncertainty.
Any new thing, right? Yeah.
Any new thing. And I get it. I had that same experience too. Anytime it was new, because you know, sometimes there was a symptom would pop up that was new that I never experienced. So there was like just such a novelty in all this that like, it almost kept you on guard all the time. And your natural reaction every time was just fear. Oh no, why is that happening? Why is that happening?
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Okay, last one. Last one. This was actually one where I saw a title, thumbnail, and I was really curious, but I had this one. I really had no, this is the first one where I was like, I don't know what Sean is going to talk about in this episode. And I didn't watch it either. So I just saw it's a really interesting title. I think this was more in the context of like feeling sad and depressed. And you were talking, I think you had a guest, but you were going to talk about the letdown effect.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. So the letdown effect. The letdown effect is, I always hesitated making a video on head letdown effect just because it's something we see when people are like in the mentorship for like a month or two. Often, I mean, it varies. But The letdown effect, really, what happens is that when you're in a sensitized state, your body's burning through all the resources, you're experiencing panic. And then what happens is it's almost like this pendulum thing. And so what happens, you're like on a really big extreme. And then what happens is when you start responding correctly, or once, you know, the anxiety starts subsiding, you kind of overswing a little bit. And instead of feeling like, you know, heightened anxiety, you almost feel like this down fatigue feeling, this feelings of a lot of people describe it as like emotional numbness, sadness. And so what happens is when people don't know what's going on, it's really funny. They're like, you know, when they're struggling with anxiety, and it's not funny, but like, it's just like, it's like so ironic in a way where it's like, they're experiencing symptoms. So they're like, what if this symptoms means this? What if the symptoms mean that? And then as they get better, they get this, what we call the letdown effect, where the body is like almost catching up and finally getting a chance to rest. And it's feeling extremely tired. And people start thinking, am I depressed? Am I dealing with chronic fatigue? Am I dealing with this? Am I dealing with adrenal fatigue? Like, and so then they start going this other direction. But what's happening is the body is just like adjusting itself. Like it's just kind of doing this, and then until it comes back to equilibrium. And so it's a really common experience. In fact, even I had it. Like once I realized my physical symptoms were caused by anxiety, I kind of like relaxed naturally. And what I started feeling was I started feeling like really intense moments of sadness, feelings of numbness. And I did it to myself. I thought I was bipolar. I was like, oh my God, I was wrong all along. This was bipolar. And then at that point, I was so embarrassed of like constantly going to the doctor. I'm just like, if I am, I am, which ironically kind of helped me on the recovery journey, even though it was for the wrong reasons, but it still helped. But yeah, so the letdown effect is something that we see a lot. It's really common. And especially people with like, even with sleep, because I didn't sleep for a while, right? And then once I started sleeping well, I started sleeping a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Like I was sleeping like more than I was used to. And I remember I used to yawn a lot when I was like at work and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, what's this? You know, am I always going to be sleeping a lot? Like I didn't sleep for a whole year and a half or something like that. But it was just the body just trying to adjust itself. So a lot of times we give it labels like this so that people stop getting in the way of their body trying to heal. But what we have found, even with the letdown effect, is the same thing. Sean, am I in the letdown effect or not? Like, how do I know?
That thing. Okay.
It's like, no, wrong focus. you know, so that happens a lot too.
Thank you.
But yeah, that's the letdown effect. Do you have any experience with that?
Like, I was just gonna say, like, this is so fascinating. You know, I sometimes, you know, when I read books, I like to read like history books and stuff like that. And sometimes I read like kind of history books on like science books, like about like scientific discoveries and stuff like that. It's so interesting that some person in Germany can discover something at the same time somebody in like Canada did the same discovery within a year or something like that.
Yeah.
And when I'm talking to you, I feel like, wow, we're kind of like, we've been in like different places, but we made the exact same discoveries. Exactly what you talk about here, we call post-arousal fatigue. And it's like the exact thing. Yeah. I use this analogy of like, a boxer or fighter who's like, you know, or a basketball player, they're in the game, they're like, people ask them like, you feel tired? They're like, no, I don't feel tired. Let's go. But as soon as they start, like they sit down for a minute, then you're like, are you tired now? Like, yeah, now I feel tired. Is that that when that hyperarousal, or what you call, I think, the sensitized state fades out, like we fully like feel the fatigue that's kind of masked there before. And I think it's actually one of those like very nice, it's actually helpful. It's a nice sign, like, okay, the hyperarousal desensitization is coming down, you're fully feeling fatigued, you're on the right path.
Exactly. And that's why I feel like even in the beginning, we were talking about, you know, universal principles. Like we're doing separate things. We're not very involved on how, but we're coming to the same conclusions. We're seeing the same questions. Yeah. And, you know, it's weird, right? Because it's like, it all kind of falls under the same category too, you know, even with the anxiety, the panic, the insomnia, it's all technically one. You know, it's under one umbrella a lot of times. Yeah, it's amazing. I know. And that was one of the reasons why I really wanted to talk to you too, because I was like, I'm curious about his side, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of overlap.
Yeah. So much overlap. Oh man, it was so much fun. I think we should definitely do more collabs like this. And just want to thank you again, Sean. Super nice having you.
Thank you. Thanks, man.
Be well now. And yeah, for everyone who wants to get in touch with you, I'll leave your, you know, all your info in the description. So yeah, thanks so much, Sean. Talk to you soon.
See ya.